Hi guys, thanks for tuning in this episode of Nicking in Times. We have an awesome guest on this episode. We have Kira Aki, and also known as Katie Charnakis. Katie is a Greek-American artist working in the entertainment industry for over two decades. On Katie's website, charnakis.com, you'll see some of the creative ventures she's been a part of in the TV and film industry. She's done acting, voiceovers, music, podcasting, and articles that she has written on Arianna Huffington's publications. Katie is a multidisciplinary artist who utilizes her voice to inspire change and transformation in people who want to make an impact on the world. Katie has been gracing the silver screens ever since, with her globalized network television landing roles on top television series such as CBS's CSI New York, Cold Case, FX Networks, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Law & Order SVU, to name a few. Katie has also excelled in film as she's booked supporting roles in films with Al Pacino, Mila Jovovich, Robert De Niro, Jessica Simpson, Morgan Freeman, Antonio Banderas, and Nicolas Cage. Katie's worked with 19 legendary A-list stars in 1 year at one point. Katie's here to promote her music and have a chat. Welcome, Katie, and thanks for coming on my podcast.
Thank you so much, Nick, for having me. And to the listener, thank you for tuning in and holding space and being here. I hope to provide a lot of value and insight for you and your listeners.
Thanks, Katie. How's it all been going over there?
It's great. It's so good. It's so good. I'm so blessed and so happy. This week, we just launched Full House. It's an EP on The Sophisticated Psycho, so that's really exciting. I also produce a web series called Couples Therapy. It's on The Sophisticated Psycho's YouTube platform, and we just got accepted. We got officially accepted into three film festivals this week alone. Nominated in competition, and all three are official selections. So for Couples Therapy. So that's really cool. We had about 200 invites and we accepted about 29. We submitted to about 29 and we've had, three yeses this week. So, our spirits are high over here.
Wow. That's amazing. That's incredible. How's life been since, the pandemic begun? How has life changed for you personally and professionally?
You know, it's wild. I kind of make a half-hearted joke of like, I kind of like fell asleep for a year and then like woke up, you know, because for me personally, I was being very cautious of not only my health and the people I love and for the people I don't know, and especially my elders, because of not knowing certain things that we didn't know and not wanting to affect, you know, people who are in less healthier conditions. I wanted to do my part by like staying away. And so I did that. And when I was able to do that, I was able to be, I'm an ambivert. So it means I'm extroverted and introverted. So I took the opportunity of me being an ambivert. I've already traveled the world twice. I've been so extroverted in so many ways when it comes to TV, film, music, modeling, my career, everything you can imagine. So I pivoted during the pandemic and I took the opportunity while I was able to do my part responsibly. In a healthy way, I just put my head down and I went so inside of my soul and my spirit. I became this massive introvert for the last year. And by doing so, I was able to, so I didn't freak out like a lot of people. I just put all my energy and focus into the arts. And so I created the lockdown web series, Couples Therapy, an improv series that I did on Zoom with people because we couldn't see each other. I went tenfold on my podcast and I was just interviewing all these people. And now my podcast is growing. We have over 4,000 downloads per month and it's growing. I focused on God, meditation, my prayer. I was able to reflect, write, dismantle the things I was trying to keep up with the Joneses. I was being invited to events, red carpet events, this fashion event, going to this event. And like my ego just felt so like, ugh, like I could just unshackle from these expectations of keeping up with society, of my ego, of my mind, of all these things I wanted to do. And so that was relieving and to kind of realign myself as a young adult so I could, you know, project and make plans, God willing, for the next two decades of my life. And lastly, voiceovers. I have a home studio and, I always recorded from home anyway, but voiceovers actually got busier, and it became a 7 day a week industry instead of like just the weekends. It's like everything was open format, and I was nonstop from March up until about 1 month ago. I've had auditions like nonstop voiceovers because it just got so busy with voiceovers. So I'm so grateful that I was able to stay busy in my arts and my crafts, but also take time out for my personal reflection of my health and checking my ego and finding out what really matters, the connection with people in life. And just, it was a new layer of appreciation and discovery.
That's amazing. Thanks for that. What inspires you daily?
You know what? I feel like on a macro level, with the universal law, we're all gifted an opportunity to be on this planet, right? Us as individuals. Like there's a TED Talk and it says, by chance that we're here is one in 400 trillion. So for us to connect and for the listener to be here, it's very intentional. We might not know it, but it's that special. It's that minute. It's that specific, even though we don't comprehend it in our, you know, peanut minds or whatever. Yeah. You know, we have 60 to 70,000 thoughts per day. According to Dr. Joe Dispenza, 90% of those thoughts are the same thoughts. But what inspires me is the opportunity that we've been here. It's such a gift. So no matter what happens up, down, left, right, in between, my base is always remembering it's an opportunity that I'm here. And also, my culture, being raised Greek Orthodox Christian, gave me such a strong rock to not judge other people and not judge other people's beliefs, but to understand, like, these are traditions of being Greek. These are, like, ways, religious ways and spiritual ways and just the ways of culture. So I was able to go out into the world as a teenager and travel the world for over a decade and be around people in France and be around people in Prague and be in India and just go to in Australia and go to all these amazing peoples around places around the world, Italy, and listen to other culture and listen to other languages and observe as a human being, just observe. Even though I couldn't understand what they were saying in Italian or I couldn't understand what they're saying in a different language, I can still appreciate that they have a language. Language is sound. And it's an exchange, and it's what they were taught. And so just to observe it as a human being and as an artist, it's really cool to see the differences that we all have and the uniquenesses that are in the world. Because once you know what you know and your cup's full, it's an opportunity to go out and learn more. So what inspires me is the opportunity to always educate, to always learn, to always be curious. And when I think I know, and for me, like a hack is if I think I already know something or if I'm like 1000% on something, that's my cue, like to pivot and to go to a blank canvas to something I don't know so I can learn something more and learn as much as I can and experience as much as I can while I have the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, that's really insightful. And yeah, I totally agree with you on a lot of things. You know, it's a privilege to be alive. You know, as you said, 400 trillion, sorry.
400, yeah.
It's crazy. Like, yeah. So when I just had a nephew recently, and yeah, it really made me realize how lucky we are to be here and how short life is. So yeah, take the moment.
Seriously. Yeah, a lot of people, they have to wait for some detrimental thing to happen or some big thing to happen to make a shift. But if we just tune in to our intuition and our spleen and our voice and stop ignoring that voice that keeps telling us things all the time, which we always do, but we actually follow our heart and our intuition, we can then tap in and tune in a more gentle way to follow our bliss and to get involved in things that we actually want to be a part of instead of suffering and not being a part of it. But we're domesticated. As children, we're very primal beings, you know, we're very primal. But as we come into the world, we get domesticated by our parents saying no, by the school saying no, by giving us restrictions. Wake up at this time, go to sleep at this time, eat at this time, have all this done at this time. we're put into these systems of what we need to do instead of, you know, so I feel like the artists are the ones and the spiritual people are the ones who kind of like know how to color within the lines, but then they know when to know the rules and know when and how to break them. And if rules can be broken, like obviously under governed law, you don't want to like go against the rules while driving because of health and safety of others. But as a human being, your life choices, like you need to do, you don't have to do anything, but I choose to do what's best for me. And I find when I make choices based off of being inauthentic or off of guilt because my mom or my dad or someone wants me to do something, I get mad at myself because I'm doing it for them. And yes, there's a thing called sacrifice, but if you do something and it keeps coming up for you and it's your calling and meant to be, we are only responsible for not answering that calling.
Right? Yeah, I love that. That's great. Tell me about your life growing up. Take us back to where it all began for you and your Greek heritage.
Sure. I come from a big Greek family. Kyriaki, I'm named after the saint, Saint Kyriaki. She was a martyr. She believed in the Lord, and there's an island named after Kyriaki in Greece. She was a very prominent saint. It means Sunday in Greek, God's day. It's my yaya's name, my father's mother, and that's who I was named after. And I feel so blessed and lucky. And I feel like it's also responsibility because I feel very connected to her in a spiritual way. And, you know, some friends of mine growing up, they even called me, one of my friends, he would call me a nun because like I was celibate for 7 years. And, like I was living in LA when I moved there. I was there for, you know, a year and a half before I even kissed a boy. And I was in LA for 3.5 years before I even got into my first relationship. I was just so strict and I was so connected to myself, source and God that I was so scared of being vulnerable and opening myself up to other energies and other people who could sway and lead me down different paths. And I wanted to be really clear-headed and clear-minded because when I was a kid growing up, my dad got involved. He ran cross country and he turned me on to cross country. So I was a runner and I learned about short-term, medium-term and long-term goals. And having that athletic mentality as a youngster, it really gave me a principle and a platform of what life would be. So as cross country, it's a team sport, but it's also an individual sport. What you do as an individual affects the whole. So if I apply that into my profession and into my friendships in life and for the planet overall, what I do as an individual, I'm a ripple effect. It's going to affect the whole. So I try to be conscious and mindful of those kind of things. So I was an athlete growing up. Turned on for my father. I was raised Greek Orthodox Christian. I was really into my faith and, you know, wanted to, you know, marry a Greek man and have Greek babies and have them speak Greek. And I speak Greek, but I wanted to speak even better Greek, you know? So I was very strict on myself in a lot of ways. I was very strict. And my mom's side of the family, you know, she's very disciplined and very strict. And I think maybe that's where I get some of my discipline from as well. And there came a point in my life where I had to like do an internal check that I was my expectations for myself were so high that I couldn't even meet my expectations. I was cutting myself off from enjoying certain things in life because my expectations weren't so high. How could I give someone else a chance if I wasn't even giving myself a chance, right? So as a youngster, being committed to myself and having those disciplines and, you know, I dabbled in acting and modeling, and that's what really set me off to be able to transition and move to California. I modeled for the auto shows, and the auto shows, they go around the world. And, you know, I was a model and narrator speaking about the different shows, and I could live anywhere in America. And the company, I worked with Ford 1 year. I worked with Hyundai the next year. They would fly you wherever you wanted, and that you could select the dates and the shows. And I always did the big shows. Boston, Chicago, New York, LA, Arizona, where the auto shows were long and for 10 days. So I would be able to live anywhere. And I chose to go to California and I would do the 10-day shows. So then I would be in LA for the 20 days left of the month. And I was in acting classes. I was networking. I was working from the ground up. I didn't know anyone. I only knew one person that I met one time when I went to California. and I just was a social butterfly like my dad. And I was just meeting and talking to everyone. And I didn't smoke cigarettes. I didn't drink alcohol. I didn't do any drugs. So I, at a lot of times the networking events would be at clubs at nighttime, but I would just go and talk with everyone and meet everyone. And thankfully for IMDb, iMovie database, you can just type it in and you can see who's a director, who's a producer, blah, blah, blah. Cause there's a lot of guys and mostly guys and people who would want to get with you or be with you or lead you on to say they're doing this movie or put you in that movie. And they take advantage of so many girls and so many boys now too. They take advantage of so many people. So I could always go to the IMDb, iMovieDatabase.com, and I could take their business card and I could see if they're really working on a project or not. So it would tell me if I should stay away from them or believe that they're actually, you know, doing something good. And I would nourish and plant those relationships. So that's what kind of segued me from in Michigan, starting in the local market. I became a big fish in a small pond, and then I had to make the choice if I was going to become a big fish in a fish in a big ocean. So then that's when I went to California. Yeah.
Wow, that's really insightful. And your personality too, you know, obviously meeting people and networking, you know, it takes a lot of confidence too. So yeah, that's massive respect for obviously everything you've achieved. Let's go into then. You're very obviously extremely multi-talented, and you know you've done a lot so far to date, which is just amazing. The trajectory you're on. Talk to me about that. So, was always the plan? Is that always what you wanted to do when you were younger?
Right. You know, two things come up about my mother, because I remember having when they had VHS tapes. I remember having a VHS tape, and I was with a broom, and I was like singing with the broom. And so I don't know, when I reflect on that moment that meant so much to me when I was a kid, my mom would play all these 80s musics, all these eight on like a record, right? And I would be in the basement and I would be with the broom singing. So I, you know, dancing, singing with the broom. And I reflect on that. Was it because I wanted to be a singer, or did I want to be someone with a microphone and a voice to be a, not only a model, but a role model and a podcaster now? And a voice with someone who had something to say. And when I was 14, I wanted to put an ad in the paper. I wanted to go to a hotel, have a conference for 2 days, and be on a stage and have people. I had it all planned out, like an all-day conference. There would be a break for lunch, or lunch would be provided. They paid $250 for a two-day conference. Back then, 14, I thought that was very substantial. That's what I came up with. And I wanted to put an ad in a paper and do that and let people know and motivate them and inspire them on life. And I had so much insight that I wanted to share with them. And the only thing that stopped me then was myself. I thought, who is going to listen to a 14-year-old girl who wasn't of the world, who hasn't traveled yet? Who's going to listen to me and what I have to say? So I stopped myself for myself. And then I went off and had my journey and traveled the world and doing everything. And now it's circled back around where I love to enrich and inspire people. And I do that through my podcast, but I also just do it in my everyday life. But yeah, so I think as a youngster, like I intuitively knew what I wanted to do. And there's a lot of kids who go and pursue their dreams at a younger age. But like I said, I feel like I stopped myself for myself. I don't know how that outcome would have been if I actually would have followed through with the ad in the newspaper, which probably wouldn't cost a lot of money in a local paper, but I never did it. But the thought was there, but I didn't follow through, which shows me every opportunity is to learn and grow from. And so I contemplate, not regret, but I contemplate, what if I would have taken that extra step then? And I didn't, but what if I did? So looking now, what if I want to do something? And what if I want to do something and I take that extra step now? Because I remember what happened when I didn't. Do I want to do that again? So I kind of can learn from my lessons, right? And my choices.
Yeah, that's extremely inspirational. And yeah, wow, it's amazing. Let's go on to your music career and obviously specifically going down that path now. I saw and read that your inspiration is from Bad Boy Bill, and you've got a great relationship with him. Talk to me about that.
Yes. Oh my God. Okay. So as a teenager growing up in Detroit, Michigan, the suburbs, all the best DJs from around the world, before DJs were popular in Western civilization, all the biggest DJs from around the world, they would all come to Detroit for these raves, underground parties. And I went to all these underground parties when I was 17. And literally, I would be like massive, like multiple rooms, multiple levels. And there would be like DJs in different rooms. It was like so cool. And it would go to like, you know, late, early hours. And what happened was, like, there would be these like DJ stands and you could, and these huge speakers, and you could just go behind the DJ booth and just like watch them do their thing. Like, it was totally fine. Like, the DJs were like the celebrities, but like you could just like be next to them and chill. And I befriended so many DJs, but this one DJ in particular, DJ Bad Boy Bill, I just loved house music, drum and bass. And I loved house music, and I loved DJ Bad Boy Bill. And he came to Detroit. Then he played in Chicago, and I went there specifically just for this specific show. And I made it, I was very intentional, and I made it a point to meet him. And this, where he was in Chicago, he was like up on a stage behind the decks. So you couldn't just like in Detroit, like kind of go behind the stage, like I said, because they were right on the ground, like this one. So my girlfriend, Tina Agurotostritis, she's Greek as well, from Corfu, Northern Greece. She drove with me to Chicago. I met Bad Boy Bill, and we became friends ever since. And he was always like this guiding light and like mentor. And he kind of like held this massive space for me, whether he knew it or not. But for me, I mean, he does, because I communicate with him, and I'm sharing more. But at first, it's like it was so sacred in that kinship and that bond. And so I would just like admire him and appreciate him. And I just, Bad Boy Bill, like the best house DJ in the world, you know? And yeah. So what happened was, during the pandemic, when I was telling you, I was taking the time to dismantle and go within, I went through my catalog of music, because I did a DJ music program in 2016 for 1 year. And I learned everything it meant to be a DJ, all the different kinds of DJs, and just played with different kinds of equipment, and just learned what kind of DJ I am, because there's so many different kinds of DJs. And so since graduating from the program, I, like during the pandemic, I took all my whole catalog, I put it together, and I had like 22 beats that I made, and I organized them by genres. And I had Hypnotic Energy that I released October 20th in 2020. I'll tell you about that one in a minute. And then the House EP was the next one, and I was going to release it on Valentine's Day, but then I decided World Poetry Day, I was going to release my poetry book that's on Amazon, A Lover's Fairy Tale. And you can go to loversfairytale.com, and you put in your email, and I have an automation that sends you a free gift of all these spoken word music videos that I self-produce, finance, and they go with the poetry pieces. So I decided to hold off on releasing the EP, House EP, in February. And then a couple months passed. I'm like, wait a minute. I have these music videos ready to go. They're on Katie Chinakis YouTube channel. And I have this EP ready to go that I had encoded with quantum physics, healing frequencies by subtle energy from the scientist, Eric Thompson. And I'm like, what am I doing? I need to put this out. So then what happened was this. A couple things. One, October 20th, I released the first EP, Hypnotic Energy. And since we partnered with the scientist Eric Thompson, we encoded quantum physics healing frequencies. And out of all of them, because there's so many, I chose 639 hertz. 639 hertz fosters forgiveness within self, for you, for our relationships, for the people around us. Just a lot of forgiveness. Forgiveness of ourselves, our circumstances, forgiveness of of other people, and just a lot more forgiveness. And I felt like on a planetary level, because of what was happening with the pandemic and the planet and the fighting and the wars and everything, I felt like we needed to do like a lot of deep, deep self-reflection and forgiving. So I released the EP October 20th under The Sophisticated Psycho, streaming on all platforms, Hypnotic Energy with 639 healing frequencies. And then through my vessel, that was the calling of my vessel, my intuitive nature and soul of the gift I've been given. Then after doing a lot of forgiving, next, this House EP, I had Eric Thompson, the scientist, encode quantum physics 396 healing frequencies. 396 healing frequencies removes guilt, removes fear. I felt like I had so much guilt and I had so much fear that I needed to remove this guilt because I was being inauthentic to who I am as a human, and I'm being inauthentic to people who I speak to because I'm not even being truthful with myself. So right now, the EP with the house music, I dedicate it to DJ Bad Boy Bill because I think it's important to be respectful of each other as humans, culture, and also pay homage to the people who've come before us and who have been inspirations. So DJ Bad Boy Bill has been a huge inspiration in my life. I love him so much. He means so much more to me than he'll ever know. But it's my sacred journey, and I feel so honored to call him a friend and that he's been a part of my journey and supports me in that way. So it really, really, really means a lot for me.
That's astounding. And yeah, it's amazing. So you actually just released, some music. So the title Full House, which came out 6 days ago, the 2nd of June. You've done Midnight House, Freedom House, Tech House, and obviously Full House. Elaborate and expand on that.
Sure, sure. So did you say expand on that?
Yeah. Like, obviously sure. All the music and those specifically, yeah.
Yeah. So when I was creating a series, I made those, and they're in order of the vibe of how I made them. And so, one is more like there's different kinds of house music. There's like subgenres within it. So there's people who more like tech house, right? It's more of a tech house kind of style. And there's people who, and then there's different kinds of like house music. So that's what it encapsulates. Mm-hmm. And specifically I released it on June 2nd because it's my mom's birthday, and I felt like I needed to remove a lot of guilt and fear that sometimes people put things onto you, especially when they want to protect you and they love you. And I feel like we have generational trauma and we have contracts with people. So by me releasing it on the specific date of June 2nd, I felt like that was me showing and telling the universe, I 1000% forgive this divine feminine relationship with my own mother, who I love very, very much. And she loves me and she's awesome and I love her. But I needed to remove a lot of the guilt and fear that maybe was projected onto me. So I felt like I'm empowering myself by releasing it on that day.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Yes, yes, exactly. Well, what happened was we went for dinner, and afterwards we came home, and we did a listening party. We had a listening party and we listened to it. And afterwards, we listened to music for like 5 hours. So it was actually a really fun time, and to be able to, during a pandemic, like celebrate from when I was a teen driving her crazy, not coming home all night.
Right.
And now seeing my dad's like, oh, so is this, you learned this beat from when you were in your rave days? I'm like, yep. You know, so it's like when you're scared or worried as parents, your kids are out in downtown Detroit, but then all of a sudden I'm an artist and I actually turned it into art and made it something. Sometimes we don't know how things are. We don't know the outcome. But if we're patient and, you know, and make, you know, aware choices, it could actually be something beautiful, right?
Exactly. 100%. Couldn't agree more with you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about your actually TV and film. Obviously, you've done a lot. CSI New York, Cold Case, those kind of shows, Law and Order, SVU. Yeah, talk to me about that and that career.
Sure, sure. I'm really, really excited to get back on TV. It's my number one goal and focus right now. I became very successful at a young age, and I'm so grateful for that. It was through my smart, hard work and determination and networking skills to be able to get those opportunities and to get the representation, because it's like a catch-22 getting representation, because it's not only about getting representation, it's about getting representation with people who have connections who can actually get you the opportunities and the auditions to put you in front of the people who can then put you in front of the producers and directors to get you in front of the networks to get you on TV. There's like so many loopholes.
Yeah, right.
So you have to really know how to nurture, do your research and develop relationships to be able to like get an agent. It's just, it's some people just can't even get an agent. Some people just like aren't taking people on, you know, it's referral only. You know, my first pilot season, I tested for 3 TV shows for comedy and drama. So once you have a quota, it's called a quota in Hollywood. Once you have a quota for a pilot, that will always be your bottom base quota in Hollywood, you know, which is great. You know, when you're going, like, let's say now I go and I'm up for a show and they're like, okay, we want her for a show. Instead of my team negotiating at the bottom rate level or the basement floor, they can look back for my files and be like, oh, she already has like a Hollywood industry rate, and they can negotiate from that up. Because obviously, you know, times have changed also, so you get paid more money. CSI New York was amazing to work on. Gary Sinise is brilliant. He gave me one of the best compliments of my whole entire career. He said I was a very soulful actor, so that was amazing, as I'm a poet, and just hearing that from him, because he was in Forrest Gump, and he was in so many movies, and he's worked with so many actors. So to get those wise words from him so young in my career, 2005, was really like, gave me a gem, like a beautiful like gift at the start of my network TV series journey, to like have it in my back pocket. He gifted me a beautiful confidence and a beautiful words of wisdom of grace, you know, for my career. So I'm grateful for that. Dennis Quaid was really cool. When I first went to Hollywood and I met him, he was divorced, living in like somewhere in the mountains. And he was in Hollywood. He's like, you need 3 things, kid. He's like, you need an agent, you need a manager, you need a job. And he said, F the rest. And so that stuck. To get that advice, it's like nothing A to B, like 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts, all the networking, all the talking, all the BS, all the monkey minds, all the emotional stuff. No, it's, you need to get an agent, a manager, a job. That's it. Focus on your craft, agent, manager, job, agent, manager, job. So, and I always go back to that, you know, like what, 16 years later. So it's like agent, manager, job. And so I have an agent. I have multiple agents, because now it's not just LA and New York. Netflix has a studio. They dump, you know, billions of dollars into the studio there. They have like a 10-year deal or something in New Mexico. Atlanta's been booming forever. New York and Atlanta right now are the busiest for TV and film. They're very busy. Right now, during the pandemic, people are like back to work. They're doing COVID tests nonstop. And you have to do a lot of COVID tests. And a lot of people, I have some clients who I coach for industry coaching, to help them, so they don't have to go through what I went through. And I can like, can I connect them with good people, have them follow certain people, have them get on certain mailing lists. I industry coach people to reach their full potential in whatever areas they want to get involved with. So they're not listening to a lot of bad advice and wasting their money and doing a lot of bad things out there, because I have over 2 decades of experience in life and in the industry. But a lot of my clients who are extras, background actors on TV shows nonstop, they have to get a COVID test. And for every COVID test they take, they get $150 just to take the test. And it's like the easy one where they just like take the thing and put it on your head now. It's like a quick beep. But, you know, the production has to pay that. So, you know, but they're being very safe on set, which is important. Yeah. So that's some brush strokes of things, Hollywood talk and industry, my career. I booked a lot of projects in Shreveport, Louisiana. There was a great tax incentive there. So I did a major movie star there with Jessica Simpson. I played her best friend. It was like #1 film in Germany. I have a lot of fans in Germany and India. Like it's amazing how many fans in Germany and India, but in Russia too. But I also did a project called Streets of Blood with 50 Cent, Val Kilmer, Sharon Stone, Werner Herzog, ranked top 35 filmmaker in the world. He personally invited me to work on the Bad Lieutenant Streets of Bad Lieutenant Port of Call New Orleans with Nicolas Cage in New Orleans with Eva Mendez. So that was really, really a grand opportunity to work with them. Yeah, and then I did Righteous Kill with De Niro and Pacino, and it was like the first time they ever worked together since their last film. I think it was called Fear or something. It was Heat, and they haven't played in a movie, I guess, in the same scenes since then. So it was really epic to play in that movie and be both with them in the same scene. So that was a really cool opportunity too.
That's amazing. Who's your favorite that you've met so far? Like, that's been the nicest and that's just been genuine and authentic, I guess, that you just got that vibe that you really connected with.
Actors or director?
Both.
You know, I worked on this film. David Tui is the director. He did G.I. Jane with Demi Moore and The Fugitive. And I did a film called The Perfect Getaway. And that was a great film. It was supposed to take place in Hawaii and we shot it in Puerto Rico. Very jungle, you know. Not Puerto Rico. Yeah, Puerto Rico. I was going to say Costa Rica. Puerto Rico. Yeah. And, you know, like when you're an actor, you go in, they pick you up at your hotel, you go into a van, they drive you to set or they drive you to your trailer or something. But it was so deep into the jungle that they had to drop us and we had to walk like a mile and a half. And because there's so many like logs and sticks, it took a while. And like, you're like deep into the jungle here, but they had, director's chairs and actor's chairs set up. And you know what? I was having this conversation with Mila Jovovich and it was with the director and her. And, you know, there was a group of us standing around and she's married, has two kids. And I was just gracefully watching, like observing her. And it wasn't like she and I were like this, like you and me, like intimate buddy, back and forth. It was more like, it was like a group conversation. So it wasn't pointed to me directly, but I was engaged and I was a part of the conversation. But I was just watching her, how she spoke. She was so eloquent and sophisticated, and she had this grace about her, and like a great person, like this wonderful quality about her. And I just took note of that, because if I never worked with her, I would have never known that, you know, just by seeing her work. But I was able to like see her just be her and just be so relaxed. And it really gave me a lot of inspiration and hope of like someone I would strive to be more like her, to be me, but to have some of those characteristics of how graceful she is as a human being. I just thought it was really, really beautiful.
Wow.
So I really admire and respect her. And she has no idea. I haven't seen her since.
I'm sure you're
funny how.
Yeah,
oh, please.
I'm sure you'll cross paths with her again.
Oh yeah, that would be so cool. That'd be really cool to do that. I was going to say, it's like, you know, when we meet people, sometimes they don't know what kind of impact they've had on us. Like I hope, and that's what I hope to be for others, a ripple effect and impact for other people, whether I meet them or not. Right. So I think that's probably the best compliment one could ever have.
Exactly. Yeah. That's that, that impact they have on you and that, I guess, that little crush you have on them that they don't know about it. So yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
That too, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Tell me about your podcast.
Oh, wait, but for directors, should I tell you the director?
Yeah, go for it.
I love all my directors. I love you all. I do have this one special moment, though, with Samuel Bayer, who was the legendary music video director for Nirvana, Teen Spirit, The Cranberries. Like, he's like the go-to music video director. And it was before he started directing feature films. Shortly after, he went and directed his first feature film, which I haven't been in any of his films yet, so hopefully he'll hire me one day. But the way we did Pink's music video, Who Knew? It's her second biggest song, Sober.
Why not? Yeah.
And then Who Knew is her second biggest song. But my friend just told me like a few weeks ago, on Clubhouse, I'm on Clubhouse, Chinakis is my profile, and he's like, oh my god, you're in Pink's music video. He's like, it has over 150 million views. And like, I was like, I had no idea. But it's like, oh wow. So like over 150 million people have seen this music video and I was the lead in it. But Samuel Bayer, it was a 2-day music video. And the way he directed me and the project and the set, you felt like you were on a movie set. It looks like a movie, although it's a music video. It looks like a short film. So he was really awesome. And then I have to say Werner Herzog, of course, because he's just so legendary, you know, and the way he explains things and his passion. And I just really connected with him. I mean, he's epic. So, yeah.
Well, that's amazing. Cool. So tell me about your hobbies and passions. Tell me about your podcast. I was going to ask you. Tell me about your podcast.
Sure. My podcast is called She's All Over the Place Podcast. And Nikki Scorpio, who's my music partner and duo in The Sophisticated Psychos, he's the co-lead of Couples Therapy. He's the lead male actor. He just came out with a single called Irregular. You have to check it out. It's so good. Nikki Scorpio. He's the one that coined She's All Over the Place. He's the one that coined the name for me. And it's so apropos because multi-billionaires, one who's a mentor of mine, and so many people are like, focus on one thing and do one thing. And although people have good intentions and they tell you what to do, especially if you're a seeker and you're asking someone their advice and they tell you, that's one thing because you're asking for it because you're not confident with your own intuition or self-worth to make the choices as an oak tree from within. So you're seeking from without. And they're going to only, some people are going to tell you what they can tell you because they love you or care for you or it worked for them. But the thing is, those are old platforms and that worked for them. But we're in this fast-paced, ever-changing world that whatever advice people are giving, it's kind of like you can take it with a grain of salt. Only so much is actually active. Some of it is deactivated because the world has just changed. It's not what it was. So if it worked back then, doesn't mean it's going to work today. It can be a roadmap to get you to where you want to go, but it can't be the exact nuts and bolts because it's impossible with evolution. So with that being said, someone said, oh, focus, do one thing, do one thing. And I had such a difficult time just doing one thing because I feel like everything I do goes hand in hand. They all complement one another on a macro level, on a detail level, on a micro level. They all tie in a bow. So with She's All Over the Place podcast, it can be everything under the umbrella of everything we've talked about and more, being a mental health advocate, focusing on ethics, morals, and values based on post-Me Too, based on traveling the world, being in the biggest markets, having married men, guys with boyfriends, females, all these people, you know, wanting to interact and go down that personal route, the boundaries of professional, unprofessional. So I can just share my 2 decades plus of experience on my podcast now. And the number one thing about starting my podcast, when I was 12, a preteen, like I think they call them tweens, right? When I was 12, I remember I was sitting on my bedroom floor and I always wish I would journal and write. And I always wish there was like a little someone telling me something. I always wish someone was giving me value or giving me a direction of what to do or what you need to know see, what happens is when you're younger, you're like, oh, I'm going to remember this or I'm going to do this with my kids or I'm going to make sure I tell people this. But we forget. So I always wanted someone to be there to like share and tell me things. So I thought I'm going to do that and be that for someone. So I have a lot of kids who listen to my podcast, a lot of adults, entrepreneurs, a lot of people in entertainment, cultured people, international people. But I want to be the voice to add value for any topic you're interested in. I want to be that person that's like giving you that direct information based off my own life experience or if someone's a guest, their experience and share in a graceful way of the highest good of not judging, of not pointing fingers, but to do it with ethics, morals, and values and to provide information. So that's why I started my podcast and, it's arts, entertainment, culture. I'm very grateful. We're in season 3 right now and, since I doubled down and start and just focus deeply during the pandemic on the podcast, I went from like remembering 2,000 downloads to like now I just got my like 10,000 downloads a few weeks ago. And now I'm like at 13 or 14,000 downloads. Like it's just growing rapidly. We have over 4,000 monthly listeners now. And so it's growing and, I'm grateful for the feedback from the people And season four, I decided a few weeks ago, I'm going to, season four will be women only. And I want to hold space for women to share their stories and only have females on for season four. It's, I don't know if anyone's ever done it before, or if it's been done, but, that's what She's All Over the Place is about. It can be anything. So season three started off with focusing on National Poetry Month and the language and the words. So my guests I've had on, if they're poets or I have them refer to their favorite, poet or read a poetry piece or something to kind of keep that theme all through season three.
That's amazing. That's, yeah, that's incredible. You're like, you're mind blowing. Everything is incredible. It's literally incredible.
Thank you. You're very, very kind. I appreciate you listening and being intrigued and asking and allowing me to share some of these things. It really, really means a lot. Thank you.
For sure. I could just ask you a million questions. We could talk for hours. I can just tell now. What's passions aside from obviously the professional side? What do you do? Like, what do you like to do, I guess, on your downtime away from everything, just relaxing, chilling or going out? Like, yeah, what is that? What does that look like?
Well, I love traveling. You know, that's the kind of thing about She's All Over the Place too, because I've traveled the world twice. So I love travel. I love meeting people, culture, trying different foods. I love to try anything once, right? As long as it's not going to harm me. I like to play with the emotion, my number one emotion, curiosity. But I love doodling. I love colors. I love painting. I grew up as a cross country runner, so I love running. This weekend I ran, you know, Friday, Saturday. I was sore on Sunday, but that was fun. And I was able to do it with my niece, who's 13 now. So it was one of the best weekends I've actually had in such a long time. And I have a journal, a joy journal and a bothersome journal, where every day in the morning, day or night, I'll write down all the things that bring me joy. It can be a flower. It can be like the clouds today. Anything that brings me joy, anything that strums my heart, I write it down. And then I put bothersome and I put all the things that bother me. Someone said something. If I felt a certain way, I write down the bothersomes. And sometimes I have to write out the bothersomes first to get it out, like to get the dark, toxic energy out. So then I can shift. And I love feeling that shift where then I get excited to write down the joy things. But I was reflecting and it's like this past weekend, because I'm visiting my family in Detroit, it was actually one of my best ever weekends because I've always wanted to tie-dye and I love colors. And my niece and I, we tie-dyed about 15 different white t-shirts and pants and shorts and stuff. So it was so much fun tie-dyeing. She played tennis for the very first time. I'm a beginner too, but to be able to teach her the basics, like it was really fun. And she's a cross-country runner and she looks like a mini-me and she looks up to me. So to be that for her, and I don't have children yet, God willing, I will one day soon because I'm not getting any younger. But it really, really gave me the insight of the importance of being out in God's nature and just being, having that sun on my body and just feeling so good. Of course, with sunscreen, but I had sunscreen on and you have to get organic sunscreen. Although that's when this runs out, that's what I'm going to do because we have to protect our body from the toxins. But it was just so fun to do that. But prior to the pandemic, traveling, seeing places, but I love the spas. I've always been a spa girl, like getting massages. I love having my muscles massaged, but because of the pandemic, that's not happening. I got this little massager and I was doing it yesterday. And just to really like honor the body, and because we ignore our body so many times, right? Like I used to be in tune with my body, but then you get this shame. People fit shame you. Dr. John Jankowicz was on my podcasting and he was talking about fit shaming. Oh, eat this, eat this. No, no, no. Go on, eat this. And then he's like, no. He's like, what do you like what it says when you're on the scale? He's like, do you like how your body looks? Like stop projecting your stuff onto me, you know? So I was like, oh wow. So, so the massager I really like, you know, to be able to take care of my body temple and to kind of get to homeostasis to preserve so I can enjoy as much as possible while I'm here. But those are some hobbies. Yeah. I like talking a lot. I like talking a lot. Yeah. And the podcast for me is more like a hobby.
Yeah, that's similar to, yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, and I love a massage too. They're the best. It really relaxes your muscles and just gets you off to a good time in life.
Yeah.
If you were 18 again and you could change anything or you could do anything differently in time, what would you change?
What was the first line?
If you were 18 again,
oh,
and you could go back in time and you could change anything, what would you change? Or you could do things differently.
18, or can we go to 14?
We can go to wherever.
If I was 14, I wouldn't have kept secret what happened at on school property from the captain of the football team who was a freshman when I was a freshman. On school property after cross-country practice, he took advantage of me. And I told him no, and he didn't listen. And he was a football player, and still a freshman like me. And I have compassion because he didn't have a dad, came from a broken home, wrong side of the tracks. But I kept it a secret. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell the school counselor. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell my parents. I was scared. If I would have told, if I didn't keep it inside, if I would have shared and I didn't silently suffer, the beast within wouldn't have grown. Because psychologically, out of sight, out of mind, you think it would go away. But it grew within me. And so then I started making choices based off of that, which plants a seed of fear and intimidation and secrecy. So I guess that same advice to myself would be when I was 18, to not silently suffer. And if something happened, instead of being Greek and being independent and being tough, quote unquote, in a man's world, to be able to know just something happened the other day and it was odd. And instead of just being like, oh, that was odd, and keeping it to myself, my dad was with me and I'm like, Dad, this person said this thing. And it wasn't like a major thing, but just the fact that I made the choice to say it instead of not, because I thought, oh, should I not tell him? And I'm like, no, just communicate it, because I transferred that energy. And I communicated that thing the other day. I then reflected and I was proud of myself. Even if it was right or wrong, or if there was the response I wanted from my dad with the encouragement, the nurture or support, I was able to vocalize my voice and I was able to be heard. Because so many times we're taught not to be heard. So many times we're taught like to keep it to ourselves or turn a blind eye. And so even though we don't want to make things dramatic or cause any troubles, it's shutting us down from ourselves, and it empowers us when we do share. And if the person doesn't want to hear it, that's their responsibility. It's not my responsibility of how someone takes my truth, or it's not my responsibility of how I share. It's only my responsibility to share. So I feel like if I was 14 and I was 18, I wouldn't have silently suffered and taken on more than I had to, because I was holding up this strong armor. I was holding up this strong armor all through my 20s, being tough in a man's world and being tough in the world because I could, quote unquote, take it, even though I'm a strong Scorpio, even though I want to be seriously taken as a businesswoman. There's ways of being vulnerable, and there's ways of being graceful, and there's ways of sharing, and it's still very powerful, and it's actually our greatest strength of all. So anyone who misleads us to not share, they have their own bag of tricks. And be around people where you can share with them, and you can share openly with them, and you can share. And when you share openly with them, they don't judge you, and they don't then say you should have did this or you should have did that, because there's no going back. But we can learn and grow from our choices, and we can learn and grow from sharing with one another. And if someone does, you acknowledge that they did, and then you know that it's not a safe space for you to share with those people, and we have to continue to find people we can share safeness with.
Wow.
I feel, thank you. Lastly, I'll just say, I feel like there's never ever going back, like I said earlier. And what has happened has made me who I am and what I'm supposed to share today. But I get vulnerable and tears do come up right now. And I wonder if, you know, if I would have obtained certain things sooner, if it would have been, yes, it would have been different. How would it have changed? But maybe those other things that would change in those kind of ways, maybe other things would have happened that weren't supposed to happen. So I feel like everything does happen for a reason, but I am still very young, but I won't play myself small or hide anything that's going on within me based on making other people feel comfortable and minimizing my own spirit and my own emotions.
Well, that's powerful. It's amazing. You know, like, I don't know, there's no even words I can currently say to describe. Like, I really respect you. I think, you're incredible. This is, wow. Like, and you know, even just, it's just your vulnerability just then, you know, like, that's just, you're just an amazing human being. And yeah, like, I just, yeah, there's not even words currently to show how powerful you are. Like, just what you just said then is, you know, purely just powerful. Like, there's not a word I could describe that would justify how much strength and courage and just your ability. And yeah, like, you're going amazing places in life. Your trajectory in life is just, it's just, yeah, that's, so yeah, like, it's probably the best I would say. I really appreciate you for actually open up, because I know it's not an easy thing, especially in this world. So.
Thank you. And it takes one to know one. And, you know, I really look at it as like this. It's like when we're babies, we don't have the language to communicate. So as humans, we have all these emotions. And sometimes when we hear someone say something, it's like, ah, I feel the same way. But because someone else said it, then you can put it to words. So I feel like we have all these things inside and we just need to keep sharing with one another language so then we can put our own colors and language to it and identify with one another. I mean, that's how we can be a ripple effect and empower by sharing, you know, instead of silently suffering. And sometimes I didn't know how to put language to things, and it's a scary place, especially if you're under this dark rock, and it takes a lot of courage to share certain things. And so you and anyone listening, I hope I've inspired you. And you know, definitely we can connect more anytime, and that's why I'm here. And I feel like this is who I am in my life's work. It's meant to be. Everything you just said,
yeah, you're truly beyond inspirational. It's amazing. And yeah, like, I look forward to seeing your journey just keep going higher and higher, and just, yeah, just amazing. Thanks for coming on my podcast. I do appreciate it. I wish everything to you and all the success. And yeah, I know we'll be in contact, but yeah, thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you for holding space and inviting me. One Greek to another. Nico.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Mia hara.
There you go.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Cool. That's it. Have a great day.
Okay. Thank you. See you later.